The Book Nook on WISO is made possible by five local library systems in Southwest Ohio: the Greene County Public Library, Washington Centerville Public Library, Clark County Public Library, the Dayton Metro Library, and the Wright Memorial Public Library.
Hello, welcome to the Book Nook on WISO. I'm Vic McCunis, and I'm delighted to welcome back to the program today John Sanford. Good morning, John.
Good morning. How are you?
Excellent, John. I see, looking at your itinerary, that you're camped out in the Twin Cities. Your new book, Deep Freeze, is, I believe, number 10 in your series featuring Virgil Flowers. We probably have a couple of listeners out there who aren't familiar with this series, which kind of spun off of your Prey series. Do you want to tell our listeners about Virgil? Who is this guy?
It is a spinoff from the Prey series. The Prey series is rather dark, violent. Lucas Davenport deals with some really ugly crimes. Virgil was really an attempt to go lighter. He deals with crimes. He deals with serious crimes, including murder, but he also deals with a lot of crummy little ordinary crime, and he deals with people who are strange and who have strange and complicated problems, and some of them are funny, and so he is really kind of my attempt to get away from the intensity and the darkness of the Davenport books, still staying with a cop, but a cop who deals with, I guess, what you would call more ordinary kinds of crime.
Mm. And in this one, it's winter, and Virgil has been called back to a little community along the river there, Tripton. That's not a real town, is it?
No, it's not.
Yeah.
It's modeled after a real town, modeled on the city of Red Wing.
Oh.
But I pushed it all the way down to the bottom of Minnesota. But doing that, having a model lets me look at stuff, so I can write it more like reporting. But at the same time, by inventing a town, then I can deal with corrupt officials without any implication about a real city, corrupt sheriff, and in the first book that I wrote about Tripton, an extremely corrupt and violent school board.
Yeah.
So you know, there are some real advantages to having an imaginary city.
In this one, then, we have Virgil returning to a community where he already has a reputation. Some of these people remember the last time he came through and cleaned house, and some people like him for that, and some people aren't real happy with him.
Yeah, there are a lot of people who aren't so happy with him. The thing is that the first investigation he did there was so spectacular. What he found was that there was a school board that was so corrupt that it had stolen millions of dollars from the school systems. When they got in trouble, they decided to start killing people. And they'd vote on it just like they would as a school board, but then they'd go ahead and do it. The thing about one of the reasons I did that was because when I was a newspaper reporter, I used to hate to cover the school board. Most people don't realize that the school boards are often the largest government agency in any given city or town. They have hundreds of employees. They have, responsibility for thousands of kids. But the thing is, that's true even in a relatively small city. But the thing is nobody really pays much attention to them like they do to other, government agencies. And my feeling is that, the corruption is really almost invisible when you're dealing with a school system. And I just like the idea of Virgil going in and discovering the kind of corruption in a school system. There were funny aspects to it, and there were funny ways that they were stealing money, and making those up was a lot of fun.
John, you alluded to the fact that in your prior career as a journalist that you didn't like covering the school boards. Well, it sounds like that would have been great if they had this hidden corruption. Why did you dislike covering them? Was it boring?
Because it was boring.
Oh, okay.
It would just drive you crazy.
Okay.
And they had, you know, like you'd sit there and there'd be 30 parents lined up, you know, to ask the school board to help them out, which the school board rarely did because they can't. They'd try not to micromanage. They'd leave the management to the principals and stuff. But these people would come in with these problems, and the problems were all, you know, my child. And they were serious problems for the parents, but there was nothing you could write about. And it was nothing that anybody would be particularly interested in. You know, it wasn't awful. It was just routine. And it would go on for hours. I mean, you know, you get there at 7 o'clock, and you'd be lucky to be out by 11. So I used to hate it.
My guest is John Sanford. His new book is Deep Freeze, and you open this one. It's no big surprise with a homicide, and we know the readers. We know who did it, and Virgil gets called in to try to figure out who did it, and the mystery for us as readers, a lot of it is, how's Virgil going to figure this out? Because the guy who did it, who's so obvious to us, isn't obvious to others.
Well, it's not only obvious to others. There's a little twist, which I'm not going to talk about. There's a little twist in the murder that mystifies even the killer. And the killer doesn't know what happened. And nobody, the killer doesn't know what happened. And that makes it really hard to figure out what was going on. I'll tell you, the fact is that I started writing this book as a mystery. There's a very distinct difference between mysteries and thrillers. And thrillers, you know, the thrillers is really a clash between two combatants, you know, the good guy and the bad guy. And the reader sees both of them. And the question is, how is this going to work out? And, you know, the classic kind of thriller is the one where, you know, a terrorist is going to set a atomic bomb off in Manhattan, and you know, the hero has to race through the streets at the last minute to push the button that turns the bomb off. And the question is he going to get there in time? And the really good thriller writers like Tom Clancy, the guy didn't get there in time, and an atomic bomb blew up Baltimore.
Uh-huh.
That's what a thriller is, but a mystery, the reader doesn't know who the killer is, and you go through this series of things, and then all of a sudden at the end of it the killer pops out of the oven like a bun, you know, and then you look back and you say, oh, there are all these clues and so on. Well, I started writing this as a mystery, and then I didn't like it, so I decided to turn it back into a thriller, but a lot of that mystery DNA is still in the book.
And we also have this concurrent investigation going on, which is fairly humorous to readers, but not so funny to Virgil. It's kind of a painful thing for Virgil to have this other investigation going on.
Yeah, I don't know, you know, this being a radio program, how much we could talk about the other investigation.
Oh, sure we can. We'll censor the salacious, ribald stuff, if you say stuff that's, you know.
Well, basically what's going on is that some people are converting Barbie dolls into adult toys and adult, just kind of adult gag gifts that are X-rated. And Barbie dolls and Ken dolls, and the Mattel company is extremely annoyed by this. They're being sold on the Internet for a premium. And what it is the people, it's a group of people in Tripton who are in the middle of the winter. They have no jobs. The town really doesn't offer much in the way of jobs, especially in the winter, because the river's closed down. It's a river town. And they need the money. And they come up with this idea of converting these Barbie dolls. And Mattel is chasing them around with a private detective. And the private detective from Los Angeles, who's freezing to death there because it's in January in Tripton, asks Virgil for help. And she does not just ask Virgil for help, she demands it. And Virgil just really doesn't want to get involved. And And the people who are making the dolls don't want Virgil involved either. And Virgil winds up in a rather serious conflict with them. I don't want to say exactly how that works out, but
yeah.
That was kind of a fun part to write because it is kind of ribald. It's as much as I get in my books, and I had kind of a fun time with it. That was kind of an interesting little thing going on there with the Barbie dolls.
And that is another aspect of the mystery, because the person who supposedly is the leader, the head of this clandestine organization that is tampering with the Barbie dolls, she's very mysterious, and everyone in the community seems to want to protect her, like she is some courageous, heroic figure because she's giving them jobs.
And they're jobs that they need. One of the things I don't want to really get, I don't write social realism or anything like that. I write thriller novels, but one of the things that's going on in a lot of the Midwest is a lot of these small towns, there's hardly anything to do there anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Originally it was kind of like the Walmart was really damaging these towns by killing off all the small little individual businesses.
Mm-hmm.
And then Amazon came along, which really damaging the Walmarts and the big box stores. And so a lot of the things that happened in these small towns, there were jobs, you know, at the pharmacy and at the local hardware store and the automobile dealers and all this kind of stuff. A lot of these jobs are going away, and they're just hollowing these towns out. You go into some of these towns, they've got a chain convenience store and a lot of empty buildings.
Mm-hmm.
And there's nothing to do there, so then the kids start to leave. They don't stick around the town. They go back. They head into the city, and the towns are dying. And that's what's happening with Tripton. There just aren't jobs. And at the same time, a lot of the people who live in these towns are afraid of the city. They've never been there. They don't like it. The Prosper kind of frightens them. And of moving, because they've only known this one place all their lives. So this woman invents these jobs. Her name is Jessie. She invents these jobs, and the people protect her.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody protects her because they don't care about Mattel. Mattel's this big corporation out on the West Coast, and it's like the sheriff says, Mattel doesn't have any votes, you know, in Tripton. And so even the sheriff is protecting this woman.
But the governor of Minnesota has influence. Otherwise, this investigation might not be happening.
And that's, well, you know, the implication there is that the governor of Minnesota, who was the former attorney general, is kind of this dumb guy, but he knows where the money is. And somebody sort of pressured him to help out this private detective, because Tripton's a Republican town, and he's a Democratic governor, so he doesn't much care about that part. So he likes Virgil because he is sort of a dumb guy, and Virgil wanted an investigation that helped him get elected. So he gets Virgil pointed down there to see if she can find this woman, and Virgil just doesn't care about it. He just wants to go away and go home and not have to worry about it. But the pressure is kind of on, so he does have to deal with it in some way.
I like the wand that this private investigator carries around. She's a tough one.
Yeah, you know, the thing is that I tried to make her at least interesting, she's a former cop from Los Angeles, and she beats up somebody pretty good, breaks her arm at one point in a fight. And there are two women get in a fight, and it starts when one of the protectors of Jesse throws a piece of hot pizza at this woman's face and burns her. But the woman carries a collapsible metal baton with her, and she beats the hell out of the other woman. So they're actually... a number of fights between women in this book, and I don't know if I've ever done that before, but it worked out. I liked it.
Well, it adds to the humor amazingly to have some of these confrontations. That's one thing about these Virgil Flowers novels, is there's always humor, and a lot of it originates with Virgil. As Virgil is delving into the case, and in this one, he's doing a lot of digging, and he's finding out a lot of things. Let's talk about the murder victim. We can talk about her, can't we? The first one?
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
The lady that has died is a very prominent citizen. She's a banker.
Yeah, she's probably the most prominent citizen in town. She went to high school, and she went to all of her schooling in Tripton. And after college, she went to Washington, D.C., where she worked for a local congressman for a couple of years, and then she went off to New York City, where she worked in publishing for a couple of years, and then she came back home. She got out there, and she found out that the people in Washington and New York weren't all that impressed by a banker's daughter from Tripton, Minnesota. So she went back to Tripton, where she really is sort of like, you know, the big frog in the law, in the small town, in the small pond, and she's very prominent. And the guy who kills her has loved her all of his life. And we're not giving much away here because this all happens in the first chapter. And he's loved her all of his life, and they're both divorced now. And he has his fantasy of you know, starting a real romance with her. He's loved her since the first hormones kicked in like fourth grade or fifth grade. Her murder is almost an accident. Not quite an accident, but almost. And then he tries to cover it up, but that then kind of leads him into a darker corner and into further crimes. And the guy is one of the lines in the book is that nobody can believe that he did it when it finally comes out. They say, you know, it's like hearing that she was killed by a duck because the guy is just he's a businessman in town, but he's almost a non-entity, and he runs an extermination business, and he's known as Bug Boy. And he also runs the local Dunkin' Donuts franchise, which his ex-wife forced him to buy from her lover. And so that was humiliating, although it turned into a profitable business for him. And so he's a guy who's just a guy that nobody pays too much attention to, and he's kind of in a nasty business with the extermination thing and stuff like that, and then he goes for the most prominent woman in town and winds up killing her. I wanted to make him kind of a pathetic character, and I guess I did, but then he turns kind of dark and. And Virgil has some problem tracking him down just because of the twist of the book.
When I read your books, I sometimes will think, well, how did he get the idea for this? Because I know sometimes you're getting inspiration for certain ideas from newspapers, from stories that you've read, things you've heard about. And when I read about the Bug Boy, I thought, did he get this from Tom DeLay? Because he was an exterminator.
I don't know where the idea came from.
Okay.
To tell you the truth, it was just one of those things that pops up. A lot of the ideas just seem to be out in the, just kind of seem to be out in the air somehow. And you just kind of pick them up. And the same thing with the obscene Barbie dolls. I don't know if I've read other people writing about strange things being done to Barbie dolls, or I tried Googling it and I didn't find much. So I guess it's because, you know, if you're writing these kinds of novels, you just sit around and you think about this weird stuff all the time. You're always thinking about the novels. I'm writing a new Davenport book right now, and I got stuck. I got kind of stuck for kind of continuing evolutions of the book, and I was stuck for a couple of weeks. And I've experienced enough, having written 40 some books, novels now, that I don't panic. I know it's going to work itself out. It's just going to take some time. And I was out walking the dog last week, and all of a sudden the whole solution popped into my mind in the course of 15 seconds. It was just a problem that was just sort of a knot, and just having it working in the back of my mind for a long time kind of untangled it. And then as you're going through life, you just encounter a lot of momentary, passing, kind of strange stuff. I wonder if I might have seen Barbie dolls at a store someplace, and it just kind of tucked it away in the back of my head, and then this came out, this popped out of the oven.
Mm.
But you see a lot of stuff. So, bumper stickers, and there's a bumper sticker in the book that says something to the effect of honk if you've never seen a gun fired from a vehicle. You actually see those bumper stickers out there, and when I see a good one, I note it down. It's just kind of passing through life and being a novelist and thinking about this stuff all the time. I guess that's where it comes from.
You see a lot of good bumper stickers when you're out there in the countryside, don't you?
Yeah. The ones that bother me the most are the liberals. I'm somewhat of a liberal myself. I'm not really very political, but I'm more liberal than I am conservative. And on a lot of issues. And the thing is that the liberal bumper stickers just really annoy the heck out of me, because many of them are so stupid. and it's actually the conservatives have got all the funny bumper stickers. Like my other auto's a 45. Kind of clever gun, pro-gun stuff, but the liberals have always they just seem dumb, and I really can't explain it. And the other thing about liberals is that they'll often have 15 bumper stickers on their car, which is usually a Prius. And they got they're just all over the back, because they got that kind of hump back of the Priuses, and there'll be 15 bumper stickers on there. The Bernie stickers and the Hillary stickers, and then there's a one for coexist, and then there's the one for, and they just kind of go on and on, and you know what the person driving the car is going to look like when you pull up next to her, and I say her, because it usually is, and I just wish there were intelligent liberal bumper stickers. There's bumper sticker that's like a visualize world peace, which is a play on visualize world peace. Which, like, the only clever one I could think of, but it's not even a liberal bumper sticker. I don't know what it is. It's like a joke. But I don't know. Uh-huh. I dropped those into the book just because they're kind of an instant source of amusement and fun. I'm always amazed by bumper stickers. Some of them are very clever, and some of them just so stupid it gives you an ice cream headache looking at them.
You mentioned that you had gotten stuck on this Prey novel you're working on, and that the dog walk helped you break through that jam. I'm guessing that this probably is the next one after the one that's about to come out, based on your publishing schedule, that you've already got the next one finished. Is that
No, this is the next one that's coming out.
Okay.
This one will be out in May.
All right.
I'm about 70,000 words into it. It's due on the first Monday after the New Year.
I see.
And then
okay.
Then they really rush it into production, and they do it fast.
Gotcha.
And so I've really got to stay on schedule. I work virtually every day, even when I'm traveling like this. I'll try to get something done just to kind of stay on the writing schedule.
Yeah. So Lucas, who recently became a federal marshal, Is he having fun with that new job?
You know, it's turning out to be more of he's having fun, but it's turning out to be more of a struggle than I thought, because federal marshals are somewhat restricted in they actually have the widest jurisdiction of any federal officer. They have jurisdiction for everything. They just don't have, I guess you'd call the equipment for everything. They don't really do a lot of investigating.
Mm-hmm.
They are really in charge of supplying the support for the courts. And usually what they do is they are chasing people who are already involved with the court system, and fugitives in particular. In some cases, really violent fugitives. They're the guys who will go crashing through the doors in these heavy special operating group SWAT squads. But that's not what Davenport does. Davenport's an investigator. I wanted to have him have this national jurisdiction so that he could, so that I could move him around the country a little bit more. This new one, but I've got to invent cases where either has or is given jurisdiction, and in this new one will be based largely in Washington D.C. and the area around Washington. I wrote a book two or three years ago called Silk and Prey about a woman who gets herself elected a U.S. senator, essentially by directing the killing of some people.
Mm-hmm.
And she's a young, very rich Democrat who defeats a long-term Republican senator from Minnesota. The senator who is defeated returns to the Senate 2 years later. He's reelected because of an investigation by Davenport indicates that he really was badly treated by the voters of Minnesota and during the first election. So he gets reelected. He goes back and she directs an effort to kill him, to assassinate him, because he is damaging her chances to become president. And after the assassination attempt, Davenport is brought back in to take a second shot at arresting this woman. She actually beat him the first time that they encountered each other. So now Davenport's going back for a second shot at her. It's a pretty interesting book, but I don't know exactly how it's going to come out yet because I haven't gotten to that point.
Yeah.
I really, even with the new evolutions that have just picked up in my head, I don't know exactly what's going to happen.
Well, John, thanks for giving us a preview, and we've had you on the show a number of times over the years. You used to come out and see us out here in Yellow Springs back in the day, and I've actually interviewed you, I think, three times in the last couple of years, so it's great to have you back on the show. It's always a pleasure to talk to you.
Yeah, and I'd like to come back to Yellow Springs sometime, too. I always like it down there, and it's an interesting place, but the telephone's good, too. So.
Well, John, enjoy the rest of your tour, and we'll look forward to talking to you again sometime.
Yeah, thanks a lot. Talk to you later.
Thanks, John.
Bye.
Goodbye. My guest was John Sanford. His new Virgil Flowers novel is Deep Freeze. For the Book Nook, I'm Vic McCunis.